Okay, welcome back, and I apologize for the delay or the lag in releasing episodes. I left Chicago and I got to California and promptly caught the death flu, and this is about, I think I'm on day six of it. It started to hit me last Wednesday, and then I woke up Thursday like death warmed over, and now I'm just in that really annoying phase where it just drags on and you're just exhausted all the time and you think you're better and then you go do an errand and then you find out you're not. So there's the reason I haven't done this. So I'll probably be completely zonked after this 15-minute spiel. But we left off with the double slit experiment and a surfing movie and sort of this real subtle and, you know, what inevitably became profound shift in my awareness of myself and my place in the universe. But there's a lot more that had to happen before I was finally led to this place of surrender. So, like, these were just sort of like tidbits, right? Like, these were just little, like, little nuggets. It's not like they dominated my consciousness. And I just became more and more and more addicted, and I became more and more of a criminal. And there was this one particular night where I want to say it was, I don't know, it was like February, just the dead of winter in Chicago. And my mom was laying down on the couch in the family room, and her purse, by this point, she was guarding her purse. And so she had it like 3 or 4 feet behind her head, assuming it would be safe. And it wasn't, because I'm a thief. And now I think like a thief. And if there's one thing that I've come to understand about criminals as the result of becoming one myself for a short while there, is that they think differently. There's just a different type of thinking associated with criminality. It's really demented, and you could argue that it's evil. You could argue that many criminals think in evil ways. So the, you know, like the Church of Satan, it's all about me, 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 me. It's all about pleasure and lust and taking. And it's, I don't think that a lot of those people are necessarily bad, but there's just this almost like disgusting, gluttonous, selfish motive in it. And I think that's sort of one of the ways that evil manifests in the world. And evil was working through me. There's no question. And so there's my mother on the couch, and here I am sneaking behind her. And what I would do is I would sneak into the family room, and I would see her purse there. I saw her purse there, and by the way, the reason I wanted her purse was because there were keys to her car in the purse, and my plan was to get the keys to her car out of her purse and then take her car with a revoked license, mind you, or at least a suspended license. I don't know if it was revoked yet. Take the keys out of her car, or take the keys out of her purse, get her car, drive it to the city, get some drugs, and then drive back. And I think I could do all of this without my mother realizing it, without my mother realizing that all of a sudden I'm gone and her car's gone. Right? So what I would do is I would sneak into the family room behind her, and I would unzip the purse an inch, and then I would go back into the kitchen, and I would like open the fridge, and I would be like, do we have any milk? And she would give me an answer. And based on her answer, I knew that she was just laying there. So then I would sneak back in and unzip it another inch or two, right? And then I would go pretend to fidget in the pantry. And what I'm doing when I'm fidgeting in the kitchen, which is in the next room, or which is the next room over, is I'm plotting, engaging, you know, where she is and her movements and her mood and her degree, the degree to which she's watching me and the degree to which her guard is down and all of these things, right? And I eventually got the purse all the way open. as a result of going into the family room and coming back, going into the family room and coming back, going into the family room and coming back. It was a systemic process. I don't know if that's the right word. It was systematic in nature. Systematic thievery. It's kind of like how a thief will scope out a neighborhood, or a burglar will scope out a neighborhood for a while, because this is a profession. They're a professional stealer. And so they'll scope out a neighborhood for a while in order to make their move at the appropriate time or at the most opportune time. So this is what I was doing, and I finally got the keys out of the purse, and I think I went out the front door maybe and actually took the car. It's a Volvo station wagon. It was brand new at the time, I believe, and drove down all the way down the Eisenhower with some money I had. Maybe I even took money out of the purse. I can't remember. But as I'm driving, or I get off actually on the street, it was the Cicero exit, and I went south. I didn't go north. Normally I went north, but I went south. And there's a street there called Polk, P-O-L-K. And they sold dope on Polk. And I started driving down Polk, and I see one of the kids walking down the street, one of the dealers walking down the street, and I flag him down, and he goes, "Go around the block." That's what they'll do. They'll tell you, "Go around the block." Sometimes when they're waiting for more dope to arrive, they'll just tell you to do laps. And so I'm like, all right, and I start driving down the street, and as I get within 100 yards or so of the end of the street, there's a police barricade there. Right? So that's what the police do, is they'll set up barricades in drug-infested neighborhoods where drug dealing is going on, and they just sit and wait for people like me to come driving through without paying attention, and then they'll pull them over for whatever reason and frisk them, and very often just take them to jail, or they'll have needles in their car, or they'll be drunk like I probably was this night, or whatever. And I saw them, and this kid basically walking down the street basically set me up, because he knew they were there, right? So I saw them, and I threw it in reverse, and I backed up in reverse probably 100 yards or more until I found a parking space. And I backed into this parking space. Now, mind you, this is not a nice neighborhood. It's the dead of winter, right? And I have no idea how long these cops are going to be hanging out, because they're just doing their thing. You know, they're all friends. They're just hanging out, just waiting for people to arrest, right? When as soon as they arrest somebody, then they can go home. So I pull into this parking space, and my heart is pumping, because at this point, remember, I'm on felony probation, or I've been arrested for a felony at least. I can't remember if I was actually on the probation yet. It's all a blur. But I've been arrested. I was arrested in October, and now it's probably February. So it's safe to assume that maybe by this time I had been through court, at least, or had been to court. Not to mention I've also got this other DUI, right? So had they caught me, I have no idea what would have happened. I would have been in jail for a while. So I was freaking out. My heart was pounding. I don't think my heart has ever raced faster in my life. I don't think I've ever been more terrified of anything in my life. I don't think that I have ever, it's when you think about it karmically, through the lens of karma, it's like the crime that I just committed was worthy of the terror that I was experiencing. That's an interesting way to look at it. And I jumped in the back seat of my mom's car after I parked it, and I covered myself in a blanket. I turned the car off, and I just ducked down, and I just waited, because I didn't know if they seen me or not. And I freaked out. And then guess what happens? The phone rings. I have a phone with me. And guess who it is? It's my mother. And she's shaking. She says, "Come home, come home. Where did you take my car? You took my car, you took my car." And I explained to her what happened. And at this point, she just starts freaking out. And she's shaking and she's shaking and she's shaking and she's shaking. And I can just hear her terror. And I'm trying to tell her to relax, trying to tell her to calm down. And she can't. Right? She just can't. This is what I did to my mother. Right? So she was going to have my next door neighbor drive down and pick me up because she didn't want me driving the car because I didn't have a license. But I basically just hung the phone up and turned it off because I had bigger things to worry about, like the cops in front of me. So what happened was, after about, I don't know, I'd say 45 minutes, I very slowly and carefully got out of the car and started walking down the street, and I saw that the police were gone. And so I just got in the car and drove, and then I went looking in other places, and I just couldn't find any. I couldn't find any dope that night. There's nothing worse than going to get dope and not being able to find it. There's just nothing worse. It's the worst thing ever. And I drove back, and I mean, what do you say after you've basically committed Grand Theft Auto? What do you say to the person whose car you just stole? What do you say? You know, and it's interesting because thinking back about probably a month prior, there was another incident where I took my mom's car. It was a different car. She had traded this one in recently. She'd just gotten this new Volvo. But I got arrested again. You know, I was driving on the way back from a fruitless score, a score in which I was not able to score, and got pulled over and got arrested for driving on a suspended license. It wasn't revoked yet, and got taken to jail. So this is like, I don't know, one, two, how many arrests is this? I don't even know. I think it's four total arrests. Right? Not to mention all of the encounters with police. I guess it's three arrests. It doesn't matter. Right? I'm gambling with my life. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. So this is month two. This is this. We'll just say that this is the second month of the year 2007. So thanks for listening. I apologize on the delay. This has been another edition of Addiction and Redemption. I'm Dave Keenis. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.